See Rome Vault Podcast, episode number 334. Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019.
The light of consciousness shines on everyone, but not everyone gains access to the vault.
Hey everybody, KMO here, and here's the deal. I've been traveling. I was away all last weekend, so you didn't get a podcast. I got back yesterday, and I'm leaving again tomorrow. And in the meantime, I need to do a lot of cartooning work and also put out this podcast and also create a video. It's really a hectic period. So I asked after the conversation with Rob in the last episode, whether you wanted to hear the rest of it, because I thought that the audio quality was pretty bad. In fact, just south of the line of what I consider to be minimally acceptable for use on a podcast. And Paul, who I will be seeing in Texas this Friday, wrote, "Yes, publish the remainder of the conversation with Rob. The audio wasn't even bad, in my opinion." Thank you for that. It seemed terrible to me. But anyway, Paul continues, "I appreciate your insights on young people traveling to the farm to seek an alternative lifestyle and the subsequent heartbreak that follows when they realize it will be much more difficult to achieve than they had originally thought. I've never heard this point acknowledged. It resonates with me because I have felt similar disappointment." Paul. Okay, well, Paul is the only person who answered my question, should I play the rest or not? So, you know, if you don't want to hear it, or if you start listening and you discover that you, unlike Paul, do object to the audio quality, I will be recording lots of new material on this coming trip. Material which I will share both with folks on YouTube and here in the vault, and some of it, I'm sure, will make it into the main Sea Rome podcast, which is still a thing, even though I don't publish it that often. But as you will hear in the coming conversation, Rob is not accustomed to speaking on mic. And so for the first part of the conversation, I went through it and I cut out all of his throat clearings, which sometimes happen, you know, in the middle of a sentence, and the pauses. And basically, I just, you know, I cleaned it up to make it sound better. I don't have time to do that with this second portion of the conversation. So I am going to adjust the audio levels and, you know, do what I can to make the whole track sound a little bit better. But I won't be going over it with a fine-tooth comb, you know, to take out the little imperfections. And in fact, I'm not even going to listen to it right now. So I have only the vaguest notion of what we talked about. Although I do remember that we talked about a book called Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country by Craig Pittman. I haven't read the book, but Rob related lots of amusing anecdotes from it. So I hope you enjoy.
All right, I was just talking about Vermont and how we have a more communal society here than most states, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. By far. I mean, yeah. I haven't lived in the Southeast, but I've lived in every other part of the continental United States, and I've lived in Alaska, and which I suppose is on the continent, so it's not the lower 48. But I've never lived any place where there was as much, where the local governance and the, you know, the most... the lowest level of governance was as active and dynamic as it is here. This is really unique in the United States.
Yep. And it, you know, it's funny because it goes back to some of the original European communities that the settlers, I guess you call them. That's the way they wanted to be. And so we're still exhibiting that model here in Vermont of 300 years ago.
Yeah. Now, Vermont did get an influx of people and ideas, I think, in the 60s.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Definitely. So, though it is a very conservative place, I tell people, yeah, we're very conservative in what we do, but we're not going to burn down our neighbor's house to steal his cow. Maybe there are some people who would, but it's, and if your neighbor needs to have his, has a need, you usually want to help your neighbor because you know that if you have a need, you want that help as well. So wherever I've lived in this state, even though there are some neighbors who hate each other, there's much more sense of community than other places I've lived in this country. And I've lived in a few places in this country. And I like that. And what are the results? Okay, we have one of the cleaner environments in this country. Forest land, wildlife, fresh food that won't kill us, clean air. And we have a generally happier society, and that's based upon some sociological studies that come out every year. And predominantly a healthier society, though we have our health issues, the opioid addictions, and we do have a fair amount of obesity here. But but generally speaking, that I think our bottom-up society, our more communal societies, produce some very beneficial results here. And maybe that's a good model for the rest of our country. Not sure it can happen, though, with such a huge population and so many stakeholders wanting to feed their own interests. That's very difficult. So the last what am I trying to say?
Chapter? Session, chapter.
My transmission got stuck. Sometimes when I try to think of a word, I think about it in another language, and then my transmission shifts to another language, and then I finally can end up back in English sometimes, but sometimes the transmission gets stuck. Stuck in another gear. So, You Are Not Alone. It's the last chapter title. We can intervene in the machine that we have created. It can always be changed. Don't reject technology. Embrace it, but make sure that human values are included in its development and use. That's a nice way to sum it up. We have all this great technology that you and I have just been discussing. Let's use it to move things forward.
I just looked up, I did a search for the happiest U.S. state. So this is on CNBC.com, and they're reporting on a Gallup index, which was created through polling. So here are the top 10 happiest and healthiest states and their corresponding scores out of 100 on Gallup's National Health and Well-Being Index. Number one, Hawaii, 64.6 out of 100. Number two, Wyoming, 64.2. Number three, Alaska, 63.9. Number four, Montana, 63.5. Number five, Utah, 63.4. Number six, Colorado, 63.4. Number seven, Vermont, 63.3. Number eight, Delaware, 62.9. Number nine, South Dakota, 62.7. And number 10, North Dakota, 62.7.
Interesting. Rural states.
Yeah.
Except for Delaware, maybe. Delaware, that's a surprise.
Delaware is, a tiny, tiny little state, but much of it is pretty rural.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I never really spent any time there.
You have. I used to have to drive through Delaware. It took all of like 10 minutes when I lived in Maryland, and I was commuting back and forth between Maryland and New York City. Mm-hmm. Literally 10 minutes is how long I would spend in Delaware.
I've driven that route before, yes. And go through that tunnel, right? You have to go through the tunnel.
I was crossing the Delaware Memorial Bridge on my journey. There wasn't a tunnel.
Oh, maybe they've closed it. Last time I went through there was 35 years ago.
So. On Interstate 95?
I believe so. And I went through the tunnel as a child a lot because we lived in Maryland for a couple of years when I was a child. And we'd come up to Vermont as a family, so we'd go through that tunnel.
Yeah, I don't know of any tunnels under there.
Maybe it's gone now. No. So it was the back side of the book, the back cover of the book says, find the others.
Yes.
You are not alone. It's time to organize, time to get back together and start thinking in a more communal way. But I find that very, very difficult in large societies. So like I said, you have so many stakeholders wanting what they want, and it's hard to convince a lot of them to start caring for the commons, for the rest of us. And I think that's why rural states are on that list you just pulled up about the happiness, because they smaller countries, smaller societies have a better way of making responsible decisions for their populations. And that might be a gross generalization, but I can point out a bunch of examples of smaller countries being able to manage themselves much better than bigger countries.
just personal reputation means a lot more in a smaller community.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in a metropolis with 10 million people, you can screw people over your whole life, and you're always running into new people who don't know who you are, who've never heard of you, who have no idea what to expect from you. Can't do that here.
No, you really can't. And in a small country, it's the same thing. You can go up to the prime minister's house and knock on the door and say, hey, I don't like what you're doing. Or I like what you're doing, right? And I tell people that I've met around the world that I like that about Vermont. The politicians here have to be more personally responsible because they're screwing their neighbors otherwise. They're screwing the people whose kids, your kids, are going to school with, you know. So it exists at a different level of responsibility, and I as you had stated, I like that a lot. You can walk up to the governor's door. You can probably call up Bernie Sanders and get him on the phone if you try hard enough.
Right? Bernie Sanders might be tough, but you can probably get Peter Welch on the phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely get in touch with your state representative very easily, within 30 seconds via email or something. Or
well, that's Peter Welch.
Yeah. Our local state representatives, right? They're our neighbors. They're our coworkers. They're local policemen. Is one guy who is just elected. He's a state policeman. All you got to do is call him. Yeah.
So on that list of the top 10 happiest, healthiest states in the union, I did not see Florida.
Florida.
Transition time.
Oh, you want to talk about Florida?
Sure.
Okay, well.
You got a lot more on Team Human?
That was it. Let me get my notes.
Florida. Okay. This is April of 2019. I just did a search for best Florida man headlines, and the top search result was the 90 wildest Florida man headlines of 2019 so far. So in 4 months, we have 90 crazy Florida man headlines. Let me read just a few of them for you. Florida man shooting at target in backyard hits neighbor sitting at dining room table. Florida man doesn't get straw, attacks McDonald's employee. Florida man arrested at Mar-a-Lago says he came to talk to Trump about his $6.3 trillion. Florida man arrested after hitting dad with pizza because he was mad he helped birth him. Florida man killed ex-girlfriend while trying to get rid of the devil. Florida man intentionally drove Ferrari 360 into ocean at top speed. Florida man denies syringes found in his rectum are his. Florida man arrested after argument over cheesesteak. Florida man accused of burning son to teach him lesson about fire. Florida man allegedly fooled family into believing murdered wife was still alive. And they go on and on.
It's a strange place. So I just read a book named Oh Florida, written by a Florida journalist, and I didn't write down his name for some reason. I always do with my notes. yes, you can probably look it up very easily. But he's a journalist there, and he says being a journalist in Florida is the most fun you can have as a journalist anywhere on the planet because you get to print headlines like those. You get to investigate stories like those.
Craig Pittman,
okay. And the thing I liked about this, I thought this book was just going to be a bunch of wacky stories, and there's a bunch of them. But it actually goes back into the history of maybe why the state got so screwed up in the first place.
Before you go there, the full title is Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country.
Yep. which horrifies me. like I was saying, he goes back to the roots of some of the wackiness, And it looks like when Florida was first settled by settlers, Europeans, it was about money, right? It was about raping the resources, taking as much as possible, looking for the Spanish galleons that had crashed on the coast or whatever to get the gold and that kind of thing. But at the end of the 1800s and certainly at the beginning of 1900s, it was about land scams. It was about selling people from the north swamp land that had been dressed up and made pretty and maybe a house put on it. So there were all of these scammers who were populating the state, scamming everybody, even themselves, each other, whatever. Everybody was scamming everybody. And yeah. and that continues to this day. And I think that's why the state continues to attract some of the stranger people in our country. Apparently, Florida has the largest non-native population in the country. So they're all immigrants of some form, from somewhere, from the Northeast. A lot of people from the Northeast retire there. Sure. But a lot of the people who gravitate to Florida, not retirees so much, there's some very strange people because they're attracted to this whole scam lifestyle and getting money for nothing lifestyle and being in the sun where you don't have to really do much planning to live through the fall and the winter. And right. Yeah, so, you know, it creates an entire bizarre environment. And I have some experience in Florida. My ex-wife's part of her family lives in Florida and has lived in Florida forever. Her mother was born in Florida. So over the years, we would go back to visit her relatives in Florida. And every time we landed, something strange was happening and something wacky would happen during our week or two there. And it was... So one of her relatives actually was born and raised in Vermont. And I knew this person as a child. Very sweet, honest, just wonderful person. She had her issues, we all do. She moved to Florida as an adult. This person always has a scam going of some kind. So whether she gravitated to the state because she had this subconscious mentality or it changed her, I don't know. But she's a different person. And she's not like stealing from people, scamming, but she's gaming systems. She's really good at gaming stuff, right? Yeah. I remember her house was being foreclosed on. She wasn't able to pay her mortgage. This was during the crisis, 2007, 2008, 2009. Well, so the bank says, okay, we're going to take your house. You can't pay, we'll take your house. So she was contesting it because her lawyer said, hey, they don't have exactly all the information they need on their mortgage paperwork to actually prove that they're kind of the owner of the house. And that happened a lot during the crisis, a lot. Like, yeah, these guys would buy mortgages without any documentation whatsoever and then say, oh, you got to pay me now. And you say, no, I don't. Show me, right? Yeah. Well, hers was not quite that bad, but halfway there. So she was going to court. So in order to rig it somehow in her favor, and I'm happy she did that because it was a big bank that was just, you know, whatever. She joined the country club where the judge, she found out who the judge was going to be on her case, where the judge would hang out with his cronies, and she started hanging out with the judge. No, she doesn't tell him the situation or anything. There was no, like, that kind of collusion or whatever, but it's more like, hey, Donnie or whatever, nice to see you again. Let's go play some golf or something, yeah. And would you like to eat? I'll go out to eat. So she walks into court. Donnie's sitting on the bench. That's not his name, but okay, it's your house, free and clear.
Wow.
No mortgage, nothing, free and clear. So she wasn't stealing, but she was rigging it. She's always has something like that going on. Anyway, that's enough about that. But so the whole state was born of this stuff. And but then he just goes on to talk about a lot of the really strange stuff that is happening there, like political corruption. That seems to be a cottage industry in Florida. I mean, it's incredible. Let's see. So between 2000 and 2010, Florida had more federal convictions of public officials than any other state. In 2013, the FBI arrested 3 mayors in 1 month. Yeah. The Governor Scott, and I didn't know this, he was either an owner or an executive at a hospital chain. They pled guilty to 14 federal felonies and paid $1 billion in fines to the federal government. It's the largest ever Medicare, Medicaid fraud case in the history of the United States. That's the governor. And he's a senator now, isn't he?
Is he? What's his first name?
I just wrote down Scott. What's his first name? Scott. Anyway, so that's the level of insanity or the corruption that you see there. Yeah, what is his name? I think he's a senator now. What's his name?
Let's see. Who are the Florida state senators? Not state senators. He's a federal.
Yeah.
Rick Scott.
Is he a senator now?
Then? Yep, he
okay.
sure is.
That's so
Rick Scott and Marco Rubio.
Ah, great. Great team.
Yeah.
So anyway, so now that's like a reality background, and then it just gets into weird stuff like, why are Floridians so enthused to have very exotic pets? And that is so true. I mean, when I go to visit the relatives, friends, there's always a python in the mix. There's always an iguana. There's always something that they're showing off. Oh, look at my new whatever, right? Some crazy thing from Asia or something. I don't know. And, of course, these get let go when they get mm-hmm. too big. Like, oh, the python is now 10 feet long. Throw it in the swamp out back. And now they have open python season. I think the state was paying people to kill pythons. Maybe they still are. And there's one guy who's considered the python king of Florida. He's a fish and game guy. His job is to kill pythons every day. He's killed more pythons than anybody in the state.
Wow.
King of pythons. Yeah. They just caught one 15 feet long, I think it was.
I was a kid, my grandmother, my father's mother, who lived most of her life in New York City, retired to Florida. So I would go to Florida, you know, for summer vacations and such. And she lived in a community that was all senior citizens. And there was a canal nearby, and there were always alligators just sort of, you know, sunning themselves on somebody's lawn.
I'm not afraid of alligators. They're pretty cool. They don't want to deal with us.
Yeah, right? they're mostly interested in our pets.
Yep. Little Fifi or Fluffy or whatever. There was an interesting frozen iguanas falling from trees. There are so many iguanas now that people let go and reproduced in the state that sometimes you'll see just trees full of them, you know. And apparently in the winter time, when it gets cold, iguanas are cold-blooded. So when it gets cold, they slow down and freeze up, right? So on a really cold day, frozen iguanas will be falling from the trees. Yeah.
You know, it's what we're talking about is basically invasive species. And it's really bad in Florida underwater. Because so many African, like, cichlid fish have been imported for aquariums, and they escape or get flushed down the toilet or whatever. And they have really just wreaked havoc on the native fish.
Sure. Yeah, well, Florida certainly is not the way it was 300, 400, 500 years ago. It's completely different biosphere, ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, snowbirds, the people who've retired there, there's a huge population there. And they certainly have an impact upon the state and some of the wackiness as well.
A big population of senior citizens is going to be another draw for the scammers.
Oh, sure. Sure. You're going to want to sell them stuff or sell them their house. There's one story here of an entire housing development that was a swamp. It was reclaimed. They filled it in, right? Well, they built houses and were selling them, but there was no running water and no sewer system in the development. But think about this, right? Let's say you buy a house and you don't get a really good house inspection, or the developer says, oh, my brother-in-law does house inspections, right? Mm-hmm. When you go into a house to look at it for the first time, do you necessarily turn on the water or flush the toilet? Maybe you do. I don't think I ever have. It's an assumption, right?
Yeah.
So you plunk down your $300,000, you move in, and you want to make some coffee, and there's no water. That's Florida.
You know, there's somebody pulling up to the site to, like, pour concrete to make a pad, and they've got to look around and say, look, there's no septic tank, there's no sewer lines, there's no water lines. What are we doing?
They don't care.
Yeah.
They're getting paid.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the other brother-in-law. But the elderly population is kind of interesting. Let's see. The drivers, right? You have drivers who shouldn't be driving. They can't anymore, right?
Right.
And so I've seen this many times. You'd be driving down the highway and somebody driving the left lane at 25 miles an hour with a blinker on for 10 minutes, you know, and they're like a little old lady in a 74 Cadillac who can barely see over the steering wheel, right? And I'm not picking on little old ladies, but this is what you see.
Yes. My grandmother was one of those.
Okay.
She had this tight little route that she knew how to drive, and she couldn't get off that route because if she did, she was lost.
Yep. So let's see. In 2012, there were 455 drivers 100 or older.
Wow.
Yes.
How many?
455 drivers of 100 years or older. Oh, but that's not the scariest figure. This is it. At the same time, there were 65,000 licensed drivers between the age of 91 and 100. 65,000 people driving around with licenses.
In their 90s.
Yep. Yep. So they have this thing the author has identified. It's a syndrome. It's called sudden elderly acceleration syndrome. Sudden elderly acceleration syndrome. That's when the elderly person driving the car mixes up the gas pedal with the brake pedal and pushes the gas pedal to the floor and runs into things. There's a post office in one town that has been running ads asking people to stop running into the post office because they stop at the post office and hit the accelerator and run into the wall of the post office. Yeah. It's a crazy place.
Have you ever played around with interactive sea level rise maps?
No.
There's lots of them online. And I don't remember the exact measure, but there comes a point where basically, you know, the coastlines are changing. They're getting crinkly as you raise the sea level. But there comes a point where all of Florida just disappears, or at least the peninsula part just disappears, you know, in an instant.
Well, if it's instantaneous, that's pretty cool.
Well, it's instantaneous, you know, when you're raising the sea level with the click of a mouse. But it's just a very flat state with a very low altitude, and it's just the whole state, at least the whole peninsula part of the state, is just not very high above sea level.
Oh, this is true. But we could get rid of a lot of wackiness if we could just make the sea engulf it all at once.
Right? Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't happen all at once and the Floridians get a chance to flee, well, then they're going to come.
We need to build some walls. I get behind that one. All right, so here we go. They call it the gunshine state.
Gunshine?
Gunshine.
All right.
Because it seems like everybody's got a gun, and it's a concealed permit gun. or people are using the most bizarre the most bizarre weapons known to man, right? There's a story of a man attacks his wife by swinging a 3-foot alligator at her. Or the man who beats his neighbor over the head with a garden gnome. They had the largest number of machetes per capita than any other place in the United States.
That, I suppose, could make a bit of sense.
Yeah, if you were living in the Everglades or something, you need to cut back vegetation. That's okay.
Machete. Yeah.
Yeah. But a large number of these weapons are used in bank robberies and armed robberies and attacks.
Yeah. If you live on the 10th floor of a condo in, you know, Daytona Beach or something, you don't need a machete. At least you shouldn't need a machete.
And there seems to be more stores that sell swords, uh-huh. like Japanese swords, than yeah. any other place in the country. There's no data to back it up, but anecdotal evidence drive around, right? And they have the most concealed carry permits in the United States on a per capita basis. And it's the place where they invented the law, stand your ground.
Yeah.
Basically means you can shoot anybody you are afraid of anytime you want, or not afraid of, but you say you are. And
it gives me an idea for a zombie movie, one set in Florida where like point of view skips around to various places, like, you know, maybe New York City and Los Angeles and Seattle and Dallas, and it's all zombie apocalypse wasteland, just zombies everywhere. And then you go to Florida, and there are no zombies because everybody's got a gun and a sword.
And interesting, the TV show Cops filmed its first season in Florida.
Yeah, never a dull moment.
No, you have plenty of material. You don't even have to leave the state for the rest of the season, the rest of the series. Just keep going. Another thing that's extraordinary is there's more executions in Florida of prisoners than any other state. Interesting. Oh, one reason why it might be so wacky now is that the people who move there, they might be the result of a decent education system, but it's highly likely that their kids are not going to be. The state of public education is apparently in shambles, and one reason is because the elderly population is so big and has such economic power, they vote against any bond issues or raising the taxes.
They don't have any kids in school.
Yeah, they're like, I did that 50 years ago, you know, and so the funding for education is just going down and down and down, which brings me to another point. So Florida decided to start a lottery, and they said, okay, we're going to use all of it, all the money for education. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That's great. Of course, that didn't happen. It's Florida. I forget what they diverted it to, but no, they diverted it to other stuff. Oh, man. Crazy journalism, too, is founded there for some reason. USA Today was created in Florida. And though it's considered more mainstream now, when it first came out, I don't know if you remember the discussion, mm-hmm. that it would be dumbed down journalism.
Well, it was.
It was. And yeah, there's legitimate. I mean, you read at that time, you read the New York Times, read USA Today, whether you agree with the Times or whatever, at least it's an article, right?
Right.
It's an investigative journalistic article, and it's more than three paragraphs long. But USA Today comes out, and nothing's more than like one paragraph or two paragraphs, or maybe just a headline with a yeah. tagline, right?
Or an infographic.
Yeah. It's yeah. still like that, but it's been around so long that a lot of people consider it kind of normal now, which is too bad. National Enquirer comes from Florida. Another journalistic giant. Oh, Rush Limbaugh is a result of Florida. Yes. Ann Coulter, result of Florida. Matt Drudge, result of Florida. Goes on and on and on. Oh, geez. I don't know. That's about all I have.
That's plenty.
I should have written down some funny stories, but you already read some. But this morning I was reading in the news, some guy was digging a hole in his backyard of his childhood home. I guess he owns it now because the parents are dead. Well, he finds a skeleton. They do some DNA testing. It's his long-lost mother. Dad had killed the mom, buried her in the backyard, and didn't tell anybody. He said, oh, she left. And the funny thing, and I think I related this to you, when you put it in the Florida context, that's not such a crazy story. It's like, oh, well, just found a body in the backyard, so it's your mom. Okay. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, it's Florida? Never mind.
Yeah.
Not so weird.
If that happened here, everybody would be like, whoa. Yeah. Whoa, that's weird. That's crazy, right?
Well, another thing to consider about Florida is it is the fourth most populous state. And it's not nearly as big as California or Texas, so it's pretty densely populated, whereas Vermont is not densely right. populated. So yeah. you're just going to get a lot less of everything here, you know, in terms of stories or social phenomena or incidents mm-hmm. or whatever. It's just we don't have that many people.
So I don't have much more, except for I do have a granddaddy story of Florida.
Okay.
As related to me by the man who lived that story. A friend of mine, a good friend of mine, he's a little eccentric. He's actually from Vermont, born and raised in Vermont, and moved to Florida with his elderly mom who retired there. So anyway, it gets to that stage in her life where they talk about how you want to be buried, right? And she says, in cremation, burial, you know, whatever you want, I'll do it. She says, you know what? I want to donate my body to science. Oh, that's very altruistic. Great. Okay. How do you want to do this? You want to be like a cadaver or can't be an organ donor? You're too old, you know. She says, no, I want to be a skeleton at a medical school. One of the skeletons that they hang from the little rack. And he's like, wow, okay. So he goes to one of the medical schools in Florida. I don't know which one. Talks to somebody there. And then he says, my mom's going to die and she wants to be a skeleton in your medical school. But they're like, well, yeah, we need skeletons. That's fine. And I guess the guy told my friend how to go about it. I guess there are services. This was a little while ago. Now they're plastic, right? They're not using real skeletons probably anymore.
Right.
I don't know. But so there were actual places that were preparing the skeletons and providing them to the schools. So he went to one of these places after his mom died. He wrapped her in a blanket, put her in the trunk, brought her to the place, had her prepared as a skeleton, and then put her in the trunk, brought her to the medical school, and
here's mom.
Yeah, here's mom.
Wow.
And this is where it gets wacky. Yeah, that's not even the wacky part.
Oh, really? That's the lead-in.
So the guy at the medical school says, oh, no, we can't take that skeleton. It didn't meet certain criteria or something, or the quality of her skeleton was not good from arthritis and other stuff, right? So I don't know the details, but it's like, no, we can't take her. He's like, well, what do I do? I don't know. So my friend, he rolls her up in a blanket, puts her back in the trunk, and drives to his drug dealer's house and buys 5 pounds of pot and puts it under the front seat of his car. And then he drives onto a little island where he lives, and he runs a red light or something, and local cop stops him. And so he says, he knows my friend. They're friends, right, the cop and my friend. He's like, what are you doing here? What are you doing going through the red light? Where are you coming from? Are you going home? He's like, yeah, I'm going home. Please don't search my car. Why? Well, I have a body in the trunk, and I have 5 pounds of marijuana under my seat. So, okay. The cop says, they're good friends. He's like, go home, get rid of all that stuff. I wasn't here. So he gets home, takes mom out of the trunk. He doesn't know what to do with her. He doesn't want her skeleton sitting around the house. That's just too weird, even for Florida. So where they live, there are some Indian mounds, some burial mounds and stuff. He has a mound in the backyard. So he digs open a mound and buries mom in the Indian burial mound.
That'll throw some future archaeologists for a loop.
I don't know what happened to the marijuana, but
I imagine he smoked it. Well, if he bought it 5 pounds, he's probably selling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my friend's story.
All right. Florida. Even so, in Vermont winters, it's a very attractive prospect going to Florida for a couple months. Yeah. Not in a position to do that just now, but
that's a cheap vacation, depending on where you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. My ex-wife's relatives lived on a very beautiful island that was very high income, low crime, older people, and beautiful. It's beautiful. I like visiting that part because it was the least weird part I'd ever visited.
All right. Well, thank you much.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
All right, everybody. That was me talking with my friend Rob. And I don't know what he and I will talk about next, but it is fun to sit down and talk with him. Next time, I will get out all the equipment necessary to make a better sounding recording. It is, after all, my job. It's what you pay for. Well, I guess you pay for my choice of guests and topics as well, but included with your $8 a month, or $7 a month if you are subscribing through Patreon, is the expectation that I will get as close to professional audio quality as I can given the equipment at my disposal. I appreciate your support and your virtual companionship, which sometimes manifests itself as in the flesh actual companionship, as will be the case this coming weekend. All right, everybody. Thanks again. Stay well. I will talk to you again soon.